The following message is copyrighted by Westminster Theological Seminary. Duplication, distribution, or other use of all or any part of this message is not permitted without prior written consent. Please direct your inquiries to communications@wts.edu. For all other information, please visit the main website at www.wts.edu.
I turn again to D'Oivert's Transcendental Critique of Theoretical Thought. As we have seen, the transcendental direction in D'Oivert's thought is most important. That, as we said, has been pointed out clearly by various commentators on D'Oivert's thought. It has been made plain also by D'Oivert himself. I am prepared to say that the Transcendental Critique of Thought flows out of the transcendental direction of D'Oivert's philosophy as a whole. It is a natural development within D'Oivert's philosophy. And as I have said, this transcendental direction was present in this philosophy from the very beginning. D'Oivert's idea of meaning, his idea of a diversity and unity within the cosmos, meant that from the beginning, his philosophy had a transcendental direction. If we simply look at the cosmos, and as we see that that cosmos has a meaning structure, we see then, too, that there is a natural tendency toward the origin. For D'Oivert, meaning was never something imposed from without. As I have said, for him, the cosmos is meaning. And so we find that the cosmos is never sufficient to itself. It always points to its origin. In fact, in all of our life and in all of our thought, there is a reflection on the conditions which make that thought possible, on the presuppositions, or as D'Oivert himself would put it, on the presupposita, which then are the generally valid structural conditions which make even our thought possible. Well, now, D'Oivert himself said that the Transcendental Critique of Thought was the key to the understanding of his entire position. But he also wrote that since the publication of his magnum opus, De Vice Prohereto Divestitae, or the Philosophy of the Law Idea, the bulk of his attention was given to the sharpening or the refining of this transcendental critique. D'Oivert, from the very beginning, gave a very important place to transcendental critique, and he continued to give a very important place to it during his career. But near the end of his career, or in the latter part of his career, what we find is that he moved particularly to think this transcendental critique through in a rather new fashion, as I say, in a way which he himself describes as a refining or a sharpening of the transcendental critique. And so let us then look for a while at Dooyeweerd's refinement of his transcendental critique. The first publication in which this process came to expression was Dooyeweerd's article of 1939, De Transcendentale Kritiek van het Wijsgerig Denken en Bijdrage tot Overwinning van het Wetenschappelijk Exclusivisme der Richtingen, or The Transcendental Critique of Philosophic Thought, A Contribution Toward Overcoming the Exclusivism of the Schools of Scientific Thought. Now, this short article appeared in a magazine, Synthese, S-Y-N-T-H-E-S-E, in volume 4, pages 314 to 339. There was an introduction to this article by one of the editors of the magazine, Professor N. Westendorp Boerma. Now, in course of time, Dooyeweerd began to organize his transcendental critique around three or four heads. These heads were stated as questions. And so later on, he began to organize his transcendental critique around three or four questions, around three or four heads stated as questions. Now, the first writing that we have in English to be organized around such heads is Dooyeweerd's article of 1947 in the Evangelical Quarterly. And this article has the title Introduction to a Transcendental Criticism of Philosophical Thought. Now, in the Dooyeweerd bibliography contained in the commemorative volume, Philosophy and Christianity, it's on page 450, this item is described as a lecture delivered to French students in Amsterdam. I am not aware as to the time that this lecture was given or to the circumstances under which it was delivered, as it was published in English in the Evangelical Quarterly, volume 19, 1947, pages 42 to 51. And we know that in 1948, Dooyeweerd published an article in French by the same name, Introduction à une critique transcendentale de la pensée philosophique. Now, this may indeed be the original behind the English version. This article appeared in any case in Mélange Philosophique, which was then a volume of the 10th International Congress of Philosophy. And the volume was published in Amsterdam in 1948. In the same year, Dooyeweerd published a book, Transcendental Problems of Philosophical Thought. This was published in Grand Rapids by the William B. Erdmans Publishing Company, William B. Erdmans, 1948. Now, this book was written by Dooyeweerd himself in English. It too is organized around several heads stated as questions. Now, the formal organization of this refined critique is already suggested in Dooyeweerd's article of 1941. De Transcendentale Kritiek van het Wijsgerig Denken en de Grondslagen van de Wijsgerige Denkgemeenschap van het Avondland. the transcendental critique of philosophic thought, and the foundations of the community of philosophic thought of the West. This was published in the Journal of the Association for Calvinistic Philosophy, Philosophia Reformata, Volume 6, 1941, pages 1 to 20. Now, in this volume, Dooyeweerd then outlines the various steps of the critique. This article is not yet organized as a whole along these lines. That is a step-by-step progression, a progression of questions. It is not yet itself organized around this. But what happens is that Dooyeweerd indeed mentions the points which will then later function as these questions, as around which he will later organize this step-by-step progression. But of more importance is the fact that this article carries on the general theme of the article of 1939, and it has the same focus. If we then find that the step-by-step progression of thought is characteristic of Dooyeweerd's formulation, his later formulation of his transcendental critique, this still takes second place to the themes, or the general theme, or the themes that are brought out both in the article of 1939 and the article of 1941. These cover the major problems that would be discussed in the later, more formally organized publications, and they would present the major lines of argument concerning the necessity of a transcendental critique. In that, these later statements of the critique have a set formal structure. The difference from the early statements of the critique is obvious. And as I pass on to a more detailed discussion of the transcendental critique, I shall follow these helpful divisions. But as I say, this formal organization is less significant than the background problems that Dooyeweerd began to discuss already in 1939 and 1941. Now, as he began to revise his critique, Dooyeweerd focused on the problem of philosophical communication. There is a crisis, he said, within the spiritual community of the West, in which communication has traditionally taken place. As a result of this crisis, true communication has broken down. The shaking of the foundations of humanistic culture brought it into a difficult position. It brought into jeopardy a truly critical spirit in philosophy, Dooyeweerd says. In its place has come a dogmatic opposition of various schools of thought. And he remarked, in his time, these schools of thought were often divided along national lines. Now, Dooyeweerd said, the philosophic community of the West must be revived. And he said, apparently paradoxically, it would seem paradoxically, at least to many persons, it is precisely a transcendental critique that is developed along biblically inspired lines that can provide a solid foundation for this community, this philosophical community of the West. Only such a transcendental critique, inspired along biblical lines, he said, is able to avoid the dogmatic identification of a religious stance with a theoretical axiom. And in so doing, as I've already suggested during the last hour, that it is then the transcendental critique that is able then to save one from dogmatism, because Dooyeweerd will maintain that it is within the schools that emphasize or that assume the autonomy of theoretical thought that there has been a hardening, that there has been the confusion of religious stance with theoretical axioms, and with the consequence that the true communication has been eliminated. Now, in the first article, the article in Synthese in 1939, Dooyeweerd begins by referring to the rise of nationalistic mythologies. These, of course, as we well know, typified the National Socialistic Movement, the movement then that was spawned by Adolf Hitler. Possibly it was present also in the fascist movements. But now Dooyeweerd is not content to deal with these movements as such. He is not content with a surface criticism of National Socialism. He explores it in depth, and he discovers the source of its exclusivism in the triumph of the historicistic view of reality. We must then hesitate a moment and ask ourselves again what an historicistic view of reality might be. The idea then that everything arises from within the stream of history, has his day, and again falls back, you might say retreats, into the stream of history. History then, which is composed of various successive epochs, each with its own character, each with its own style. But if one takes a consistently historicistic point of view, what he has abandoned is the idea that there is a possibility of a rising above these historical epochs, of obtaining then a universal point of view, a point of view in terms of which one is able to span these various periods, these various epochs of history. This historicistic view of reality wrenched itself free from the restraints of what is called natural law doctrine. A natural law doctrine would say that there is an order, that there is a structure of things that inheres in nature, that holds then for nature, something to which we can appeal as a set of values, as in order to obtain criteria, something that rises above history and by which then history can be judged. The historicistic worldview, Dooyeweerd also said, taken to its extreme at least, also passed beyond idealistic philosophy. If one looks very carefully at idealistic philosophy, he can find then suggestions of an historical approach. Even there may even be suggestions of historicism. But characteristic of an idealistic approach is that there are ideas which must rise above the historical stream in some way, that are not able simply to be reduced to history, so that the ideas, let us say, are simply the sum total of what goes on in history, but instead, whatever goes on in history points toward the idea as an end, is impelled, let us say, by the idea as a beginning, as an origin, as an arche, so that the idea then in some way guides, in some way impels history and is not able to be reduced entirely to history. An historistic point of view, on the other hand, takes this historical stream very seriously. It then reduces everything to the historical stream. And Dooyeweerd says that National Socialism, with its claim to exclusivism, its dogmatic attitude, could be traced back, if one looks in depth, could be traced back to an historicistic point of view. That would mean, of course, that there would be the abolition of any standard above the National Socialistic movement by which it might be judged, by which there might be an impartial, an unprejudiced, an unbiased judgment. Now, so Dooyeweerd said that there had to be a transcendental critique of National Socialism to lay bare the motives underlying it, to lay bare then what this National Socialism was taking for granted. Now, with the rise of historicism, the idea then of a community of Western thought was undermined. This idea of a community of Western thought had been based on assured humanistic assumptions. It had been on the basis of the idea that one can know something about man, not just this or the other man, but about mankind, that one could gain a universal idea of mankind. And based on this universal idea of mankind, there could be then philosophical communication. But with the rise of historicism, and the triumph of an extreme historicism, there is a loss then of these humanistic values and this humanistic idea of community everything then is reduced to history with its epochs without any possibility of bridging between them. Now, the problem of communication is now dealt with, Dooyeweerd said, in the face of this deep-seated crisis in Western thought and Western civilization. This crisis rooting then in the crisis of humanistic certainties. And Dooyeweerd maintained, quite in line with his thinking as a whole, that this issue is primarily a religious one, that this issue then is primarily one which roots in that depth of things in which there is this religious motivation, that we have to see that the crisis of community, the crisis of the community of philosophical thought, is basically a religious phenomenon. Well, he says, if this be so, then within this crisis situation, it can no longer be taken for granted that there is a common foundation for humanity in an autonomous human reason. It had become such a commonplace. It had become such a presupposition of everything that one would think and do, that to criticize it, that to reject it, would seem almost impossible. But Dooyeweerd said, given this crisis, given the fact that it was no longer possible within this historicistic point of view to gain any transcendent standpoint, that it became difficult, he said, even impossible, to accept autonomous human reason in an uncritical way as the foundation for scientific thought. Now, Dooyeweerd said that it is precisely the transcendental critique of theoretical thought, this transcendental critique which then is developed by the cosmonomic idea philosophy, that offers a broader and deeper foundation for this scientific community of the West, the community of thought within our Western culture. Because he said this, that the transcendental critique bases this community on a readiness to enter into transcendental criticism. It then offers the possibility, it then declares its readiness to search through the issues in their depth, to, as it were, to reason through them, to talk through them, to talk through all of the issues, to have them out, you might say. And in a particular use of the word, then, Dooyeweerd is ready to call this interchange dialectical, namely of, not in a certain ways, but the idea of talking through something, a dialogue, speaking through the issues, exploring them in their depth, and analyzing them thoroughly. Well, in this case, we find then that Dooyeweerd says, now, where can we then find the foundation for the community of the West again. And he would find this precisely within the line of transcendental criticism, which was his from the very beginning. And as I have said, in the latter part of his career, he sought to present in a more formal way. And in this, especially since the idea of universal reason was brought into question, especially since the rise of historicism, he said the situation was ripe for an approach that would make this humanistic idea of reason itself the subject of inquiry. Now, it is already then in this article that Dooyeweerd enters upon a line of argument that soon became standard in his transcendental critique. He says, reason has been offered as a platform for philosophical communication. But in doing this, thinkers have presented as self-evident what in point of fact must be made into a problem. The present crisis highlights the problematic character of reason. But he said, now, reason itself then cannot offer a common base. Far from being able to provide a common foundation or a common basis for thought, reason itself is multivocal. In the history of thought, it has meant widely divergent things. Dooyeweerd later on will repeat, he will say over and over again that reason meant one thing for the ancient Greeks. It meant something else within the scheme of thought represented by Thomas Aquinas. It means something else again in the modern era with Descartes and with the rise of what Dooyeweerd would call the science ideal. In the history of thought, reason had meant widely divergent things. And he said, these meanings cannot be reconciled in any simple fashion. How then are we able to understand this variety of meanings? Dooyeweerd said, the source of this variety can be brought to light, can be revealed only by way of an analysis in depth, that is, by way of a transcendental critique of the foundations and of the structure of theoretical thought. And so, it is by way of such a transcendental critique that one can discover a firmer basis for the philosophical community of the West. Paradoxically, Dooyeweerd will argue that this philosophical community is possible only because of the religious antithesis that is present in all theoretical thinking. Within the confines of humanism, with those who have held to a universal humanity and a universal reason, in which is rooted then the rationality, the dignity of man. These people had said, of course, that religion was to one side. The reason was not founded in religion, it had to be founded in itself. And religion then became something on the periphery, something that one might indeed enjoy, someone that he might indeed cherish, but which really had no essential relationship to a philosophical argument. Now, Dooyeweerd, of course, is going to insist that all theoretical thinking, including philosophical thinking, is rooted religiously, that it has a religious foundation. But paradoxically, he will say that the very possibility of philosophical community is founded in an understanding of this religious foundation of theoretical thought. The acceptance of the fact that there is a religious antithesis, a religious opposition that runs through all theoretical thinking. And the transcendental critique aims to lay bare the religious foundation of all thought. Now, in his first article, then, Dooyeweerd argues along various lines that theoretical thought lacks self-sufficiency and thus cannot provide a common basis for discussion, for a scientific community. It cannot be then founded in a universal, neutral reason. Now, that Dooyeweerd then says this allows him to brand reason's claim to autonomy as a prejudice. The claim that reason is neutral, that reason is sufficient to itself, that reason then, as it were, can set its own standard, can establish its own law. Dooyeweerd refuses to admit as a basis for common thought and life. Indeed, as he has pointed out, this idea of universal reason and universal humanity has fallen upon evil days. It has fallen into a crisis situation. And this leads us then to say, or gives us the opportunity of saying, that the claim to autonomy of thought is itself a prejudice. Now, what the others have done, those who hold to the autonomy of thought, they have claimed that if one then is to be truly scientific, if he is going to be truly rational, he must begin within theoretical thought. And Dooyeweerd has maintained in his critique, he has maintained that therefore these people eliminate any position that asserts that thought is religious in character, that the religious antithesis underlies all thinking. They will not allow any such position to claim the character of science, to claim for itself a place within the scientific community. Dooyeweerd says this is wrong, because this itself, the very refusal to admit Christians, let us say, into the scientific community, Christians who want to take their faith commitment seriously. The very fact that these people are excluded from the scientific community itself then is a prejudice. It is a result of a prejudiced point of view. Now, Dooyeweerd, as I have suggested also the last hour, Dooyeweerd then maintains that this situation arises because humanistic thinkers have confused pre-theoretical commitment with scientific axioms. Dooyeweerd says, no. Our religious commitment is not of the nature of a scientific axiom. It cannot then be brought in at the very beginning of thought as a scientific axiom, which must then control all of thought. Instead, Dooyeweerd will see it in a different way. He says that all thought is religious. No thought is neutral. And as we come to thinking, as we come to philosophy, as we come to science, we come, therefore, with religious prejudice. We have already decided certain things. As Christians, we would come with the ideas of God appearing in Jesus Christ. We would come with the idea that God has a witness to himself in all things and continues to witness to himself in all things. We would come with the idea that God has created man in his own image, that man has fallen into sin, and that he needs redemption in Christ Jesus. We come with that, and we certainly cannot give that up in philosophical or in scientific inquiry. So we come with the prejudice. Dooyeweerd maintains that everyone, the humanist included, comes then with a prejudice. But he insists that no prejudice may sail under the colors of a theoretical axiom. No one may come with his religious prejudices and insist that these must be accepted as religious axioms. In dialogue, he says, all the parties come on an equal footing. No one may claim precedence over another in the dialogue by reason of his faith. No one may be excluded by reason of the prejudices he has. No one could be excluded then because he is a professed Mohammedan or a professed Christian or a professed Jew or whatever it may be. As far as that is concerned, everyone may enter the dialogue and indeed enters the dialogue with his prejudices indeed, but not claiming for these prejudices the status of an axiom, of a theoretical axiom. But then Dooyeweerd says that one then is free to enter upon a transcendental critique. This transcendental critique is a way to a restored community. Everyone then should be open to explore his thinking in depth. And if he's going to do this, he is unable from the outset to assume then the autonomy of thought. Because it is precisely thought, our thinking processes, which are now then going to be subjected to this transcendental critique. And if one says, by way of a prejudice, from the outset, no, this thought may not be examined as to its foundations because our thinking is rooted in itself, it is sufficient to itself, it is autonomous in the way it proceeds. The transcendental questions, Dooyeweerd says, have been excluded from the very beginning. Now, earlier in his career, as we know, Dooyeweerd has said that in our philosophizing, in our scientific concept formation, and so forth, that we were controlled by three basic ideas, which he called the cosmonomic idea, or the law idea. And this law idea, as we have seen, was composed basically of three of them, namely of the coherence of meaning of the cosmos, how everything hangs together within the cosmos, the deeper unity of the cosmos, how everything we do, let us say, in science causes us to reflect on man and the central position that man has within the cosmos, and then the origin of all things, that in our philosophizing, in our science, we are drawn ultimately to reflect on God, the Creator, who is the origin of all these things. Now, if we are then going to have well-defined concepts, if we are going to be able to develop our theories, our hypotheses well, we must take into consideration the particular kind of law idea within which we are proceeding. There's always then what we might call a centripetal direction in our thought that guides us to these ideas. But now what Dooyeweerd is going to do is this. He is going then to say that what we have to do is now to examine thought as such, to examine the theoretical thinking, our theoretical thinking as such, as to its structure. And what the position he will come to is that by an examination of theoretical thinking as to its structure, we can show we can, as it were, demonstrate that all thought has a religious foundation, that all thought is rooted in a basic, fundamental, a religious commitment. This, indeed, he is willing to call a prejudice. Is something that prejudges things. We start out here, we shall not then abandon our initial religious commitment. But the thing that Dooyeweerd is concerned about, he's concerned about in this article. He begins on this line of thought, which will characterize his further development of his transcendental critique. That we not confuse then these religious takings of position, these religious commitments with theoretical axioms. And he maintains, however, that is exactly what the humanists have done when they have maintained the autonomy of thought, and that they have said this is a basic religious commitment, but when they have said that unless one accepts the autonomy of theoretical thought, he will no longer be allowed within the scientific community. Dooi Verte, in his Transcendental Critique, in his further elaboration, will be attempting to tear off the mask from this assertion to show its true religious character. To show its true religious character.